Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. Biden does a bizarre press conference. Also, we are joined by a very important guest, Senator Tom Cotton. We talk about the CCP Genocide Olympics. We talk about free speech on campus and so much more. You guys can email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, you could do so by going to charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support to get behind the work we are doing to help educate the next generation. We would love it if you would support us at charliekirk.com/support. If you are a high school or college student, or if you have a high school or college student in your life, go to tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today. A Turning Point USA chapter can help you and your family or your loved ones or you yourself as a child or as a student or as an activist learn how you can properly educate future generations around the Constitution and American exceptionalism. tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. I want to get into the Biden press conference yesterday. I read the New York Times, so you don't have to. I also have the Wall Street Journal here, which the Wall Street Journal does a nice job, definitely in comparison to the New York Times. Wall Street Journal is not perfect, but they are very thoughtful. And you'd think after a president who has like a 35 to 40% approval rating does a two-hour press conference, that would be the lead story. Instead, both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, they mention it briefly, but the big takeaway was some of the blunders and some of the fumbles from that press conference. In addition, a massive failure legislatively in the United States Senate, which we're going to get to. I think if you were to kind of go into the strategy session of Ron Klain, who's the chief of staff to Joe Biden, to Jill Biden, who is the wife of Joe Biden. Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Jill Biden. I'm so sorry. That's right. Never mean any offense to the woman who has a PhD in education. It's a doctor. She worked very hard for that. Dr. Jill Biden, Joe Biden, Jen Psaki, and all the kind of group of unimpressive people running our country. I think that they had a strategy meeting. And I think the force of gravity against the Biden regime is finally starting to be felt. I think finally, all of a sudden, they're starting to realize that they're losing on the Fauci virus. They're losing on the economy. Inflation is a real thing. They can't get their legislative agenda passed. They're not going to get their voting deform act, not voting reform, but the deformation of voting. And the borders are wide open. Internationally, they've been a complete and total joke, mockery, and disaster. So I think in their strategy meeting, they said, okay, people say that Joe Biden's mental decline is impacting his ability to govern. Let's shoot Joe up with whatever sort of kind of adrenaline that is necessary and deploy him out there. I think the point was to try to show that Joe Biden was going to go over the top long to try to win kudos and praise from the establishment media. This is his first press conference I think he's done in quite some time. Some people said it was his first ever press conference as president. Second? Okay. That was his second press conference. Trump used to do these almost daily. He did them for fun. And I will say, for reasons that we can speculate, the media was pretty critical. The media did not use, so Mr. Biden, how is the ice cream in the White House compared to when you were vice president? Is it softer? Do they really get the mint chocolate chips right in there beautifully? How's the coffee? Is it perfectly brewed? No, actually, the questions were pretty critical. They were direct, precise. Now, nowhere even in the ecosystem, nowhere even in the atmosphere of questions towards Donald Trump. And I agree with my friend Tucker Carlson. The press conference was totally weird. It was a strange deal. Joe Biden leaning in, he does this thing where he kind of like hunches over the podium. You notice that, Connor? And he kind of puts both of his arms down and he looks directly at the reporter. And then he whispers, you're exactly right. And he was still calling from a pre-selected list of reporters. And there were multiple blunders that came out of that. But if the point was to try to show the nation, look at, hey, if you have any concerns about how sharp this guy is mentally, I mean, come on. He stood there and talked for 2 hours. I don't think that mission was accomplished. In fact, I think that there were more questions than answers. Stumbling through words, getting adjectives incorrect. And then also, basically, messing up the entire White House narrative when it came to Russia and Ukraine. Let's start with Cut 67. Biden on Russia invading Ukraine saying it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion, Cut 67.
So I think what you're going to see is that Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having a fight about what to do and not do, etc.
So that's all of a sudden where the neoconservatives and the media began to lose their mind. Now, Biden plays the role of a neocon. He doesn't even do that well. He doesn't even do the warmongering thing well. He contradicts the own regime's narrative that they want to go to war with Russia. Now, I have my own personal opinion of kind of Joe Biden's, let's say, 45 years in D.C., that I think he deep down knows that a ground war with Russia is actually really bad for his presidency right now. And I think deep down he's wrestling with that. I think deep down Joe Biden and Jill Biden are trying to push back against the Jake Sullivan, Jen Psaki, the Tony Blinken, and the Lloyd Austin kind of beat the drums of war that we need to kind of posture and send Tomahawk missiles to some meadow in Western Russia to prove how strong we are or whatever it is the national security establishment does. Now, I'm no fan of Russia, and we've gone through this in great detail, but a nation in crisis is not a nation prepared for war. I want to say that again. A nation in crisis that we are not prepared, nor should we be prepared, to try and deter, which comes from a Latin word, push back or to reject, Vladimir Putin's incursions on Ukraine. He continued by saying, and by the way, all the headlines are about Ukraine. That was basically the biggest takeaway. It wasn't that, wow, Joe Biden stands strong against critical questions. People are like, no, actually, you have a lot of people really worried, including the Ukrainians. Cut 79, he continued on this. Play cut 79.
Of course you have to be concerned when you have, you know, nuclear power invading. If he invades, it hasn't happened since World War II.
Now, I don't know who on earth gave him that talking point. But it's so wrong. Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. Soviet Union had proxies in then Rhodesia, which eventually became Zimbabwe. China basically invaded. Now, I guess you could make an argument that China wasn't a nuclear power at the time. But China was heavily supportive of the North Vietnamese cause. They were supportive of the North Korean – the push, basically the creation of North Korea alongside Soviet forces. This idea that – no nuclear power has invaded another country. What would you call the annexation of Crimea then? What would that be? What would you call back in 2000, if my memory serves me, 2009 or 10 or 7 or 8, right when Bush was president, when Putin pushed the boundaries on Georgia? Remember that? When Russia basically annexed parts of Georgia. Now, maybe there's some sort of technicality that he's talking about here. I'm not really sure. That was 2007. Yeah. I'm not really even sure the point of that. So he kind of contradicts himself, but here comes what was the major takeaway of this entire press conference, where Joe Biden half threatened Putin, but at the same time, it's like, well, it depends what he does, and he's probably going to do something. Do we have that sound where he says he's probably going to do something? He said something of that variation, where he said, yeah, look, he's probably going to invade in some way, shape, or form. Yeah, you know, only I wish Joe Biden was so concerned about the invasion of America. Isn't it telling? And I just want you to think about this. And maybe you're listening to this and you support a ground war with Russia. Maybe you think that it would be wonderful for the American project to have a hot war with probably top five military on the planet. I want you to think deeply, though. Why is it the entire press corps relentlessly ask questions about whether Putin is going to invade Russia, and yet no one seems to care about 2 million people invaded America across our southern border this last year? Why is that? Now, I am no fan of most Republicans. However, I will tell you one thing that strong Republicans are for. I'm going to answer Joe Biden's question. Play cut 69.
I did not anticipate that there'd be such a stalwart effort to make sure that the most important thing was that President Biden didn't get anything done. Think about this. What are Republicans for? What are they for? Name me one thing they're for.
I will. The Constitution. Most of them actually care about the Constitution. And I know you love freedom and want to defend it. And I know you love the Constitution, unlike Joe Biden. And we just answered his question. Joe Biden was asked about Afghanistan, and he said this. Play cut 70.
There is no way to get out of Afghanistan after 20 years easily. Not possible, no matter when you did it. And I make no apologies for what I did.
The way he was talking is so bizarre, wasn't it? I mean, he was kind of like stretching out his vowels. No easy way. It's just really bizarre. Joe Biden was asked about his legislative agenda. He says, I'm not Bernie Sanders. I'm not a socialist. Play cut 68.
Convince me that I am Bernie Sanders. I'm not. I like him, but I'm not Bernie Sanders. I'm not a socialist. I'm a mainstream Democrat, and I have been. And mainstream Democrats have overrun me, if you notice.
Yeah, mainstream Democrats, you mean ones that want to try to revolutionize the American voting system? Now, here's the most interesting one. Cut 76. How many times did we hear the media say that Donald Trump was trying to delegitimize elections, that Republicans were trying to undermine the integrity of elections? So Joe Biden now went from saying that the 2020 election was the most secure, safest, best election in history, to now saying that the midterms could potentially be illegitimate if they don't pass the voting laws that we want. Play cut 76.
You were asked whether or not you believed that we would have free and fair elections in 2022 if some of these state legislatures reformed their voting protocols. You said that it depends. Do you think that they would in any way be illegitimate?
Oh, yeah, I think it easily can be illegitimate.
That the 2022 midterms can now be illegitimate. They used to call that a threat to our democracy, that this is how democracy dies. We are not exaggerating, the people would say on television. This is how democracy dies in real time, saying that elections could potentially be illegitimate. So what has changed exactly from our elections the last time? Georgia passed some very vanilla bill saying that you can't ballot harvest. Arizona decided to do a moderate audit of Maricopa County. What exactly has changed? What's changed is not voting laws. No. What's changed is not people's ability to participate in elections. No. What's changed is Democrats look like they are going to lose historically in November. And so Joe Biden is already trying to prime the pump, trying to say that, hey, if we lose in November, it could be an illegitimate election. We used to call that undermining our democratic institutions. But you see, when they say that we want to protect democracy, they don't care about democracy. They care about Democrats. They want to protect Democrats in power. Whenever you hear democracy, it is a code word for Democrats having perpetual power. Legitimate representative democracy in a constitutional republic actually doesn't work well for them. They tend to lose elections, especially when the elections are fair. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? Producer Andrew's right here doing an Iron Man thanks to Relief Factor. And truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older. That can do it, getting older, which is why I'm so impressed with the people at ReliefFactor.com. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. They recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back pain, neck pain, shoulder, your hip or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted, only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. Check it out right now, relieffactor.com. You should order the 3-week quick start too, discount only $19.95. See if it will work for you. I think it possibly could. Give your body what it needs to heal itself. Go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. Check it out right now. With us is one of the courageous senators. We criticize the Republican Party quite often, but this senator, he's a fighter and he's terrific. Welcome back to the show, Senator Tom Cotton. Senator, how are you doing?
Hey, Charlie, it's good to be back on with you. Thank you for those kind words. Happy New Year to you and all of your listeners.
Thank you so much. Yesterday was a historic day in the Senate. It seems like the Democrats tried their best to try to eliminate the filibuster, and it failed. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, thankfully, it did fail. Republicans stood united against that, as we have been from the very beginning. And Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin also stood with us in preserving the rules and the customs of the Senate. These rules and customs go back more than 200 years, Charlie. They are directly downstream from where our founders created a Senate in the first place, to provide the sober second thought against radical sweeping change to our country. It's pretty amazing that 48 out of 50 Democrats were willing to blow up the filibuster. They were willing to break the rules to change the rules. And Charlie, it wasn't about something that, like taxes or gun control or abortion. As important as those issues are, as much as the Democratic Party would like to mandate nationwide late-term abortion or confiscate guns or raise your taxes, it was about the rules for how every state elects its senators and other public officials as well. I can't think of a much better reason to have the rights and privileges of extended debate in the Senate than to protect that right to conduct our elections and our states consistent with the Constitution and the views of our people. That would have just been the first step towards redistributing political power in this country. The Democrats' next stop probably would have been to make Washington, D.C. a state, our federal city, that is by far the most liberal jurisdiction in America. So the Democrats could get two more Democratic senators in perpetuity. The next stop would have been to pack our federal courts to include the Supreme Court, to stop the courts from overturning any of these unconstitutional actions. This entire effort, Charlie, was not about just altering this or that public policy. It was about forever changing the structure of political power in our country. You sometimes heard the argument that, well, the Democrats shouldn't do this because the shoe was on their other foot. Their entire goal was to make sure, Charlie, that the shoe would never be on the other foot. So it was a critical day in the history of our country and the history of the Senate as an institution. And I'm glad we stopped these radicals. That's why we have to turn them out of power in November.
That's such a smart point. And I don't really understand why Sinema and Manchin are the only ones. It would have been smart if Warnock and Kelly would at least pretend to participate. They're up in November. I haven't had anyone be able to explain that to me, but it is what it is, I suppose, and the filibuster remains. And you bring up a great term, the structure, and our mutual friend Dr. Larry Arnn from Hillsdale College always talks about the structure of the Constitution being one of its defining characteristics. And they basically wanted to just break apart Madison's vision for the separation of powers, basically say we want to be able to do whatever we want with no sage deliberative body process at all whatsoever. So I want to ask you about something you've commented on social media a little bit, and there's two parts to this question also included with the Chinese Communist Party. I can't pronounce this guy's name. He's one of the Warriors owners, Chamath Palihapitiya. I mean, no offense, it's a tough one, and I'm sure maybe you know how to pronounce it. He basically says with no remorse, I don't care about the Uyghurs. I don't care about the Uyghurs. It's a horrifying clip. You've been going pretty hard against him, calling for the NBA to force him to sell his ownership and how they're hypocrites if they don't. Tell us about your take on this.
It was a shocking interview, Charlie. I mean, it showed a depraved moral indifference to the terrible suffering of millions of ethnic and religious minorities in China. Let's not make or have any illusions about what China is doing to these people. These women are being forcibly sterilized, Charlie. And if they're not being sterilized, they're being systematically raped by Han Chinese soldiers in a kind of intergenerational ethnic cleansing. These people are being forced into concentration camps where they get re-educated in the thought and ways of Xi Jinping. They're doing forced slave labor. Unfortunately, oftentimes for Western companies, But for this guy to go out there and say he just doesn't care, and make, don't make any mistake, this was not an accident. No. This was not something where he misspoke. This is exactly what he thinks. And, you know, this is a guy whose investment firm is named Social Capital, and he saddles up his moral high horse and rides it hard on things like climate change and green energy. It all gets back to him just being a greedy, woke CEO who wants to make a buck. He knows he can make a buck from all of his Democratic pals to whom he's given millions of dollars and are going to give him tax breaks and other incentives for green energy. And he wants to make a buck in China. He wants Chinese money to invest. He wants access to the Chinese market. That's exactly what this is all about. The NBA has a history, Charlie, of taking action when someone states an unpopular opinion. You know, they made an owner sell the Clippers a few years back because of prejudiced comments he made. If they don't step forward and make this guy sell his stake, I think they'll be exposed for the hypocrites and the panda huggers that they are. They just won't say anything critical of the Chinese Communist Party because they are so desperate for access to the Chinese market.
That seems to be a pattern and a theme. Speaking of which, I haven't been able to track down your thoughts on this, so I'm super curious. The Olympics, I think, should be delayed, postponed, or canceled. The fact of, you know, putting the Olympics in mainland China, especially with the recent events of the virus originating from there. What are your thoughts? Do you think Team USA should compete? I do see an argument that potentially it's okay to send them to, you know, you don't want to deprive athletes from their ability to achieve success, but is it the right place, right time to give China this international platform for the Winter Olympics?
Charlie, I called a couple months ago for a complete and total boycott of these genocide Olympics. I, too, hate to see athletes deprived from the chance to compete. But last summer, I sent a letter to the Biden administration. I asked them for their plan to keep our athletes safe. They got back to me in November. They had no plan whatsoever to protect our athletes from DNA harvesting under the pretext of COVID testing, or to protect them from around-the-clock electronic surveillance, or just to protect them from arbitrary arrest and detention. And now when you add to that, Charlie, the fact that the coronavirus is once again raging across China, China is lying about the extent of the coronavirus, but we know that's the case because they won't even sell tickets to their own citizens. And the threat that our athletes face of being put into arbitrary quarantine, or if they say something that's critical of the Chinese party, Chinese Communist Party, just being arrested. I do not think it's safe to send our athletes there, nor do I think that we should be endorsing the Chinese Communist Party and their crimes against civilization. And you raise a very, very feasible option, Charlie, which is to postpone these games, wait until next winter, and have these games in another country, a civilized democratic nation that has not committed the crimes against the civilized world that the Chinese Communist Party had. We did it just a couple years ago, Charlie. They postponed the Summer Olympics in Tokyo from 2020 to 2021. And the Summer Olympics, Charlie, are vastly larger and more complicated and complex. If you can postpone the Summer Olympics, you can certainly postpone the much smaller Winter Olympics and have them in another nation a year from now.
See, that's why I have respect for you, Senator. You actually answered the question. Most politicians would dodge. We need a committee. We need a study or something. You got right to it. I have a lot of respect for that. So there's been this dramatic 14-point shift in party preference just in the last couple months. I'm sure you saw this. All of a sudden, more people identify as Republican than Democrat. It's almost like a once-in-a-generation shift. You mentioned we need to displace these people from power, and you're exactly right. What do Republicans need to do, though, to keep up the momentum? Because just kind of doing the same old kind of Republican talking points, I don't think it's going to be enough. You've been leading the charge on talking about Soros-funded DAs, talking about the rise of crime, talking about some of these other issues. What do Republicans need to do to achieve victory in November and also put strong Republicans in office that are actually going to do what they say they're going to do?
Charlie, the simplest thing for us to promise is that we will stop the madness. We will stop trillions of dollars of wasteful spending that are enriching Democratic donors and client groups. We will stop the inflation. We'll get supplies back on the shelves of stores. These are the things that have caused that massive swing towards the Republican Party and has sent Joe Biden's approval ratings plummeting. More broadly, though, as we look forward to the future, we have to remember where this new support is coming from. It's coming almost entirely from working class Americans across the country of all races. We saw in the last election that President Trump and the Republican Party in 2020 performed as well with Hispanic voters as we have since George Bush's reelection in 2004. And it's not because we started promising amnesty and threw our borders open. It's because we had a strong working class agenda that promised good jobs at good wages, that controlled inflation with sound monetary policy, that didn't excuse criminals but locked criminals up, and that got control of our border. These are the things that appeal to the broad majority of Americans of all races. That's the way we're going to continue to build on what I think is going to be a new majority for the Republican Party.
Well, I love the sound of that. So we have about a couple minutes remaining. I want to be respectful of your time, Senator. You have introduced a bill. I'm not sure if Democrats are going to kind of flock to support it, but we've talked about this before, and you've introduced legislation protecting free speech on college campuses, very close to my heart and with the work we do at Turning Point USA. Talk a little bit about this bill and whether or not you think it has a chance of success in the Senate.
Charlie, universities, by definition, should be a place where you can engage in robust debate. They should encourage a variety of viewpoints, many of which we're not going to agree with, because let's face it, the left controls universities today, but conservatives or even moderates should be able to speak out and voice their opinion in these debates without fear of censorship or harassment or official condemnation. Increasingly, though, that's not what we're seeing. We see censorship and cancel culture has started on college campuses, and now it's emerged out of campuses into the broader public square. We need our colleges and universities to teach our kids to be thick-skinned, to be intellectually tough and rigorous, and to hear genuine debate of opposing viewpoints. But too many of these colleges have undermined First Amendment rights by imposing speech codes or what you call free speech zones, where they give you a small little square of land, usually off by the power plant, the corner of the campus.
At 2 o'clock in the morning. That's right.
At 2 o'clock in the morning. So what our legislation would do is force these colleges, many of which are public universities, almost all of which gets federal dollars, to respect the free speech rights of their students, to let them have those rights at appropriate times and places, and to not treat their students like a nuisance and act like left-wing speech police.
That is well said. Senator, thank you for being so generous with your time. And I want to see a coalition built to at least postpone these Olympics. And also, any way we can help with that piece of legislation, let us know. Senator, thank you for fighting. We need more of you. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Charlie.
Look, did you get hit with a big tax bill you were not expecting? With rates still being very low and home equity being high, it's the perfect time to refinance and get some cash out of your home. Look, you could go to one of these woke banks, Citibank, Chase, where they hate you, they hate the country, and they hate Christianity. Or you could refinance right now all of your mortgage needs with my friends. Guess what? It's so easy to remember the website, andrewandtodd.com. Just write it now. AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific Mortgage. They're people I know and trust and work with them, and you should too. Just go to AndrewandTodd.com. It takes 30 seconds to answer a couple of questions. This gives them the information they need to give you valuable information, often on the first call. Andrew and Todd, they are not brokers. They are bankers, which means they handle your loan from start to finish, so you always have someone in your corner. Take that first step towards getting that cash you need today. AndrewandTodd.com. That's AndrewandTodd.com, or call 888-888-1172, 888-888-1172. Do not use the banks that hate you. Use Andrew and Todd. They will do a great job for you, everybody. AndrewandTodd.com. That's AndrewandTodd.com. Let's go to cut 72, Savannah Guthrie asking Kamala Harris about Biden thinking that Russia will invade Ukraine. This is the top news story because we're supposed to really care about Russian-Ukrainian borders but not have any concern for our own. Play cut 72.
The president said yesterday, among other things, that he thinks that Putin probably will invade Ukraine. Later he said he wasn't sure, but he said he probably will go in. Is that, for all intents and purposes, acknowledging that this threat of severe sanctions that the administration has made is having no effect on Putin, that he's actually not deterred by it?
Well, I'm not going to psychoanalyze President Putin of Russia, but I will tell you this. It is clear to us that the decision is probably in his hands.
Well, yeah, obviously the decision in his hands. This is the problem with American neoconservative foreign policy. Look, I'm not a fan of Russia. I'm not a fan of their form of government, obviously. Do I consider them to be an existential threat of the United States? Absolutely not. They're a declining population, and they're concerned about some sort of language dispute with Ukrainian borders. And part of Ukraine is just kind of a fictitious border that was built anyway. Now, with that being said, here's the problem with neoconservative American foreign policy. Putin knows this. Putin knows that we're not going to make good on our threats. He knows America is war weary. This is the problem with 20-year occupations in Afghanistan. This is the problem with, as John Quincy Adams, the fifth president of the United States, said, Americans need not go around the world in search of demons to destroy. I mean, that's not the role of American foreign policy. It isn't. Now, when you are in crisis, America's in crisis, we can't put supplies on our shelves. Our borders are wide open. We have double-digit inflation. You must do the medical equivalent, or I should say the political equivalent of a medical issue, triage. You must triage. For those of you that have ever been to a hospital, you know that if you have a runny nose or a gunshot wound, you're treated a lot differently. You go to the front of the line. I've been to an emergency room a couple times. Producer Andrew actually brought me to an emergency room once when I had that awful back pain. Never doing that again. I thought I was having a blood clot because my left leg was just totally shaking. Different story for a different time. And what I think we must recognize is that when you triage, you must prioritize because you have limited resources, limited time, limited people. Now, the neoconservative lobby in Washington, D.C. doesn't want to admit this. They think that a border dispute between Ukraine and Russia actually matters a lot more than the southern border in our country. And some people say, well, we could do both. Can we? We haven't done one. How can we do the other? And why haven't we done one? If we're willing to have press conference on press conference analyzing military movements of Vladimir Putin's Russia trying to go to Ukraine, why don't we have satellite images, drone reconnaissance, or a daily tracker of how many Hondurans or Nicaraguans are walking into our country? And the other part of neoconservatism that starts to fall apart really quickly is also they know we are not going to see this through. We are not prepared to make good on any deterrence threats. We aren't. If you make a threat saying such as, hey, this is a red line, don't cross it, you better be willing to go to war. You do not say that lightly. And it will actually make us weaker as a result. Russia doesn't believe it, obviously. Why would they? Vladimir Putin knows how the West works. The West talks a good game. And then all of a sudden, we kind of look around and we're like, yeah, I'm not sure if we're ready to go lose 600,000 people over this. Putin knows that, obviously. And so this is not a negotiation. It's a hostage situation. Sanctions don't move him. He wants Ukraine. Now, if we were smart, we would actually have some sort of bilateral summit with Putin, not the way Biden was doing. Sit down with Putin and say, hey, listen, you're a Christian country, overly autocratic for our taste. We're whatever. China's the problem. You don't touch Ukraine. We unite. We give you a couple concessions. You give us a couple concessions. Let's make sure that our grandchildren don't speak Mandarin. Cool? Fist bump. That's what a mature society would do. You want to know a thought crime? You can't win a world war without the support of Russia. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts. As always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.